again and welcome to I've Got a Beatles podcast, and we're slipping and sliding here right now with Dave and Chris here, really getting into that first one to get this episode fired up, because, you know, it's been another, how many years since John Lennon released this album, Rock and Roll? 40
yep.
Years, yeah. So, well, we realize it's time for some John, and this is a perfect album to kind of get into some of the things that he was into at the time. It was his last one for quite a while, so it's kind of important in the in his career, and I think we're gonna have a lot of fun with it too, because it brings up a lot of issues.
Yeah, for sure. Now this is sort of a timely release for a couple of reasons, which will one will come up when we talk about the song Stand By Me, but a John Lennon vinyl box set's about to come out. It's going to be released on the 8th of June, and that'll include, of course, John Lennon, Plastic Ono Band, Imagine, Some Time in New York City, Mind Games, Walls and Bridges, Rock and Roll, Double Fantasy, and Milk and Honey. So wow. You can get all those on vinyl, brand new pressings of it. So
wow, probably pretty, be just as awesome. Good as the Beatles ones that were released, too.
Yeah, yeah. It says it's from the original Analog Master, so...
Oh, cool.
Pretty good, pretty awesome, pretty great, and a good time to hear it again for the first time. So
yeah,
you know, good time to tackle talking about it.
Well, I think this brings up the, you know, John Lennon's album Rock and Roll is a cover album. There's no original songs on it, and it's all basically 50s and early 60s songs. And the Beatles did a couple of these in their solo years, and they played a lot of these songs. But what do you think about oldies albums in general and music of the 50s? And, I mean, obviously it was important to the Beatles since that's what they grew up listening to and playing. But what's your thought on the ones they did or just oldies albums in general?
I don't love oldies albums in general. I find oldies albums... are old usually oldies albums specific to 50s music or 50s and into the 60s a little bit, and a lot of that stuff I find very dull, very basic, or very lyrically, and one of these I'm just going to tear into some of the lyrics on one of the songs, very just kind of dull, you know, dumb lyrics. So I don't love them, but some have been done better than others. I'd say this one's probably on the range of all oldies albums on the in the slightly upper end of it. Maybe not quite as good as the one I like the best, which I'm sure will come up on the show at some point, is Run Devil Run. I really like that.
Paul's 1999 cover album, yeah, with a few originals too.
Yeah. So I think that's maybe the way to go for it, is to have a good take on it and you know, really take ownership of it.
Yeah.
This sort of could have done that, but kind of failed for many different reasons. You know. So that's how do you feel about all these albums?
I like playing a lot of this stuff because it's really mindless and it's very easy to play. You can always get together with people at a jam session and say, let's play Johnny Be Good, or let's play, you know, any of these songs, because they're blues-based, three-chord type songs, the typical early rock and roll kinds of songs. So I think they may be more fun to play sometimes than to listen to. But I think, as I said, it was very formative for the Beatles. And John Lennon, I think in most of his interviews, they asked him, well, do you like listening to your music? And he said, I don't listen to anything except old rock and roll, because that's real and authentic. And, you know, Elvis, that was it. And Buddy Holly, Little Richard, these were the guys who, you know, that music spoke to John and Paul so much. So I guess in that respect, it's kind of interesting to see what their takes on these songs are.
You know, that brings up an interesting psychological thing that I heard, which is, if you liked music from the ages of, say, anything that you like from, say, age 7 to 15, which for me would have been top 40 80s music, later in your life, you even if you fake that you don't like it, it's impossible not to like it. It's impossible yeah. to. I love the Eurythmics. I love like stuff like that, and it's just like so psychologically ingrained in me because it's the first kind of music I heard. And when I was 7 and 8, you know, that's not like Pop Goes the Weasel or whatever, you know, when you're discovering music for the first time. So I think that, you know, obviously that puts, you know, I mean, anyone who's read the Mark Lewisohn biography knows how much the Beatles were so into Gene Vincent and Chuck Berry and these guys, and how, you know, they just race down to the store and get the 45 and all gather around and listen to the 45 until it, you know, crumples apart.
Right.
You know, so I can understand Lennon's love for the music of his youth.
Yeah, absolutely. And that really comes through. Although this is kind of a strange album for a lot of reasons. I guess we want to get into the mechanics behind it or the history a little bit. It was a complete disaster, really. It's amazing it actually got done because, well, first of all, we always think George was the only Beatle who kind of borrowed some music. Well, it turns out that's the main reason for this album is because John was sued by Morris Levy, who owned all the Chuck Berry songs, and he noticed a nice comparison between You Can't Catch Me and Come Together, which has a sort of similarity that we'll discuss when it comes up.
Yeah, for sure.
Yes. And so instead of, you know, so John, of course, they're all nervous and, oh God, I'm being sued and all this, so what am I going to do? So they settled and John said, all right, I'll record a couple of Chuck Berry songs or songs that you own on my next album.
Yeah. So I think they specifically agreed to 3.
Yes, there were 3, exactly, and including this one. So this was going fine. So then John said, hey, well, who would be better to bring in to produce this but somebody who recorded a lot of great 50s songs and 60s songs himself, Mr. Phil Spector?
Yeah.
So in June or let's see, in October and December of 1973, so we're right after Mind Games, he says, okay, Phil Spector, come in and I'll just be the star here and sing the tunes and we'll just go for it. So what happened during these sessions? Were they really productive?
Well, you know, if John had to toe the line, if he had to produce, if he had more on his plate, he might have not come into these so drunk. But apparently he just came in drunk all the time and just kind of half-assing it. And half of the they had way too many musicians. They were a little out of tune. The session was in chaos, you know? And then Phil Spector was the wrong guy to have there too, because he takes forever to do everything apparently, and he has an odd personality that clashes with people, and he doesn't take any crap from anybody. So at some point he shoots a gun off and Lennon's furious because, hey, you could damage my hearing and that kind of stuff, and it just turns into a nightmare. They spill a bunch of alcohol, apparently.
That's my favorite story, was that they spilled whiskey all over the mixing board in the studio and were kicked out of the studio and forbidden for coming back.
Yeah.
I mean, this is like...
So Spector, I guess, took the tapes with him and just was like, screw you, and like ran.
Yeah, he took them, stole them. So then, you know, at the meantime, John records Walls and Bridges and starts to do his own songs. And then all of a sudden, Mr. Levy gets a little bit ticked off that John hasn't followed through on recording all these songs of his. So eventually, they go back to it, and John ends up, and the musicians, they finally decided to take it seriously. they got the tapes back, and then they actually just laid down all these tunes pretty quickly. And
yeah, and they say those sessions were the complete opposite of the other sessions. They were quick, very efficient, very organized, and together. Ironically, except for a couple of exceptions here, most of the songs I like on this album are from the Spectre sessions.
Wow.
Which are just, I mean, though they were a sort of a nightmare, the sort of looseness and funness of a couple of these tracks are, I think, what would have made the album spectacular had they been able to, you know, get through those sessions in a better way.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would have, a Spectre produced album of this would have been a little bit of a better album than some of the very droll, very forgettable items, particularly on the second side of this.
That's an interesting point here, because of the 13 songs that were on the original album, four of them were produced by Phil Spector, four that came out were actually produced by him. The rest of them really sound a lot, if you're a big fan of the Mind Games, Walls and Bridges era John Lennon, these would fit right into that period. It's that same sound with the horns, and we'll talk about all the specifics, but it has a very distinctive sound that of his early to mid 70s, I guess, 73, 74, 75 stuff. Mm-hmm. And I think, we'll get into the pros and cons of it, but there is definitely, you can definitely tell the Phil Spector stuff when it comes in. So I love the stories. This was like the lost weekend to excess kind of things happening here, with just being drunk all the time. And
it's pretty funny when you hear stories that are wilder than him and Harry Nilsson.
I know.
like this was too much, and then they calmed down to doing those sessions and afterwards. You know, it was really settling down. And,
yeah, exactly. You want
to
get
the one other thing before we get started with the track by track I wanted to mention is the album cover and how that came together. Maybe you want to talk about that.
Yeah, it's a famous picture. It's an early song by photo that I believe was found at a Beatle Fest, at the first Beatle Fest. And it was a photo by Jürgen Vollmer, who... you've heard his name if you've watched the Beatles anthology. He was an old Hamburg friend.
Yeah.
And it's a picture of John standing in a doorway, and then there's a blur, and it's actually the other Beatles were blurring, walking in front of him.
Yeah, including Stu.
Yeah, including Stu. Awesome. And it's a pretty cool-looking John. He's got his leather jacket and leather boots on, and sort of like, don't mess with me hooligan kind of look on him, but... it's a pretty cool thing. And then there's the neon lights that are above him that say John Lennon and rock and roll. So it's a pretty iconic cover. I've seen that on t-shirts and stuff too.
Yeah, it's a really cool cover. All right, well, let's dig into some of these tracks, and let's start it out, how the album starts out, by hearing a little bit of his version of Bebopalula.
So Bebopalula by Gene Vincent.
And, yeah.
I think it's a pretty good opener. You may know the Paul McCartney version from his Unplugged album, which he also started the concert with, and it's much slower than this. This version is really piano-driven to me. It's got a good feel. There's like a four, doom, 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 doom kind of background rhythm going, and... I think John sings it really well, so this is a good opener to me.
Yeah, decent solo.
Yeah,
in it
yeah,
too.
With the guitar.
Yeah, this is a Beatles fave. They would play it in, particularly in Hamburg years a lot, I guess. And somewhere you can find it on a real scratchy sounding Beatles cover of it. And George Harrison loved it, and he had a Fender Strat known as Rocky, and he had the phrase Bebopaluda painted on it. And you can see that in Magical Mystery Tour. It makes an appearance, that yeah. Strat. So, yeah, they're all huge, huge fans of it. Much bigger fans of it than I am. I've always found it to be sort of a so what song to me. But here it's not too bad. None too shabby.
Yeah, I mean, a decent opener. It's upbeat and gets you into the mood. So it works well. And it leads pretty well into the next song, which... maybe we'll just play it first, and I don't think we even need to introduce it quite yet because it's so famous, but we'll play it and then chat about it. By Me. That was the big single from this album.
Well, of course, this is quite timely that we're playing this because Ben E. King, who wrote this and he had a big hit with it, just passed away at the age of 76. So very sad that we lost a great old composer and singer.
Yeah, formerly he was also in the Drifters, who sang a lot of great 50 songs too.
Yeah. So but this is what you want in a remake of a song. Is it has the spirit of the original but sounds a lot different and really sounds like the voice of the person who's singing it. And I think this is one of the all-time great cover versions of a song. Or really, you know, John was unsuccessful in other songs on this album doing this, but the emotion he puts behind the lyrics of this, the singing of it is just outstanding. And of course, you've got the guitar, acoustic guitar feel at the beginning of it. It's a very specific kind of thing. So I really love it, you know. And so one of the best Lennon solo tracks, really. I feel like so.
Wow.
So
I'll be honest. I actually don't like the song at all. It's very simplistic and monotonous. If you listen the original, because it's only four chords, and I don't know. That's what I listen for. I listen for musical stuff, and to me, it's very boring. But I'll say that this version makes it because of a lot of what you just said. John's voice is so sincere and sounds so good. And everything in the arrangement, it's the guitars, the electric guitars are nice.
The solo,
just really
a brilliant solo.
Yeah. It all works together. And I think as I was reading stuff for today, somebody had mentioned in one of the books on the solo Beatles, I said that he definitely eclipsed the original on this one. And I would tend to agree. I think it's a really big standout track.
So Stand By Me, a slight agree to disagree on that one.
Yeah, I think we both love it. I like the version. I don't like the song, but I like the version certainly.
Yeah, yeah. I'd say that.
It's because of too many gigs that I had to play it in high school bands, because it's something that the bass player could play because it only had four notes. So,
okay. Well, we'll move on to the next thing, which is one of two medleys on the album. This is a medley of "Rip It Up" and "Ready Teddy." Blitz.
All right, so a little Little Richard medley here. A couple of songs made famous by Little Richard and Elvis. So what do you think about Rip It Up and Ready Teddy?
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
I the drums are great on it.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a good energy, and the sax solo is really good. And I think it captures his intention of the album, which is to like just really have a good time feeling rock stuff, you know.
Yeah.
Old time, good time feeling rock. Let's have fun.
We're gonna ball tonight.
Yeah. So what about yourself?
It's good. Yeah, I like it. It does work well together. You barely can tell they're different songs because they're the same kind of chord structure and same musical structure. I was missing, I think, you know what Paul would have done on this one? I think we're missing a few whoos.
Some Paul histrionics. Do, 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 do. Stuff like that.
I think that would
here we go, yeah.
That would add something.
Before the solo, of course. Yeah. Or if the old Beatles would have played this, the 63 through 65 Beatles, right before the sax solo. Yep. There wouldn't have been a sax solo, it would have been a guitar solo. But then
oh, totally. Totally. Some Little Richard histrionics going on here. So that's the only thing it's missing for me. But there's a lot of horns on this album. And there's a lot of horns on Walt Bridges and some, you know, a lot of John's mid-70s. On Harry Nilsson's album, Pussycats, there's a lot of horns, too. These guys must have been busy in sessions. But, you're a former horn player. And they can really, a horn can really add something to a song, or it can detract. And so far in the songs we've heard, what's your thought?
So far, it's been okay. I generally think that this album overuses it quite a bit.
Mm.
And some of the arrangements, and I'll point them out when they come up, some of the arrangements of particularly the sax parts on a couple of these, I'm just like, what are they doing? It's very distracting, awful sounding sax parts. And two, it's like, well, if you're doing a pure rock and roll album, why you got so much, like, why every song's got like 15 musicians?
So much production. Yeah.
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 So that's my other kind of, it's sort of puzzling to me.
That's great. Cause that's, you know, the one when you were mentioning Run Devil Run. Yeah. That really is just the four guys. It was David Gilmour and the drummer, and you know, it was a very simple group and pianist. So, it's very overproduced and in some places. I don't know if you think the next one is when you get to "You Can't Catch Me." And so we have our first Phil Spector.
Yeah, production. Here we go. Let's hear what Phil Spector does with "You Can't Catch Me."
Yeah.
What do you think? You Can't Catch Me.
So, You Can't Catch Me, this was the song we were talking about earlier, the Chuck Berry song that John borrowed a little bit of to get the feel and the groove and one lyric from Come Together. It's okay. It's very, you definitely have the wall of sound going in the production, very reverb heavy.
Yeah.
It's a little bit, again, overproduced, especially with the horns. I do like one of the licks, though, that they play. They go, it's right where we just faded out there. I think they have some pretty interesting licks, but a little much. I'm not sure I like the bongo opening.
Yeah.
Are you a big fan of that opening of it?
I think this one kind of works for me. I found it on my repeated listenings of this the last few weeks. Particularly, I was up in Milwaukee to see a concert and a Bulls game. And go Bulls. and this one just kept sort of reverberating through my head. So the reverberation worked.
Yeah.
I think this is an example of when Spector and his Spector and Lennon worked together, when the reverberation of particularly of the drums and of Lennon's voice kind of create this sort of like sort of echoey kind of thing on the top of the whole song.
Mm-hmm.
That really works for me and really works well on a couple of other tracks here and when they worked with each other at other times. I said it's a shame it didn't work out these sessions, because
yeah.
I also wonder, you know, we only have a few tracks example from them. I wonder if they'd have done some tracks that maybe were really Phil Spector's kind of things that he produced.
Well, like girl, you know, group kind of stuff.
Girl group kind of stuff with Lennon's vocals. I wonder if what the results of that would have been. You know.
Well, we heard it a little bit with George and Try Some, Buy Some when he. Kind of that one worked pretty well, I think.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. So I sort of like this track. I was surprised that I kept thinking about that this song.
Because you're not really a Chuck Berry fan, particularly. I remember you saying that in one of our previous episodes. You're not a huge fan of his songs, particularly.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of Chuck Berry, of Phil Spector, or of doing oldies. But for some reason, I was like, hey, this one's
it
really
works.
Good.
Yeah.
Now, the next track, this is where we're not going to play this. It's Ain't That a Shame. Which, of course, we've heard other versions of, including a Paul version on Choba Coop.
Yep.
Choba CCCP.
CCCP, great Fats Domino song.
Yeah. Many other places we've heard that song covered a lot. I prefer the original to this. And I really don't like the sax on this. It sounds like the arrangement of this sax makes it sound like a strip club or something. And then the backup vocals at some point. Just kind of dopey. I thought. I don't know about you.
Yeah. Yeah. So not a big fan of Ain't That a Shame. Yeah, so that leads into one of the songs that was, I think, specifically asked to be recorded here. That's Do You Want to Dance? And it sounds a lot different than the original 50s song. So maybe we can check that out here and see what it sounds like.
Hey!
Got a little reggae feel going there on that one.
Yeah, this song and a few others on this album is what I would have hoped that the whole album would be. It just sounds fun,
yeah,
light. And relaxed and mm-hmm. like a party going on. This particular track sounds like there's an island pickup jam.
Totally, yeah.
Lennon just kind of wandered into and like,
yeah.
Hey guys, let's play Do You Want to Dance? How about it?
Yeah.
You know, so and it's like you said, it's so different than the original that yeah. You know, sometimes we get these oldies albums, and even Bebopalula, which isn't, you know, objectionable here at all, is just kind of the same song, you know?
Yeah, and that was one of the things that I guess that John had said, that he told the musicians, just play it straight like the originals. We're just going to play it like we know them, and except for this one, which is one of the few that's actually really different.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but maybe that's why it's pretty interesting. It works. So yeah. I like that.
I hate to disagree with John Lennon, the producer, but I think John Lennon, could have used a little more variety on some of these.
Yeah.
Well, here's another Chuck Berry tune.
And another Phil Spector.
Another Phil Spector production. Maybe a little less successful than the first one, but let's hear a little Sweet Little 16.
So Sweet Little 16, the Beatles covered this one. You can hear it on the one of the BBC, live at the BBC sets. Very different sounding. This one's much more laid back, and that may be one of its downfalls.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's, well, you got a lot of slapback delay on John's voice trying to really conjure up the sound of the 50s. So he's got, and the wall of sound is in full force here. All the elements are there, but to me, what kills this one is the kind of the flangey guitars that just go through the whole thing. Wow, 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 wow.
Yeah.
And then the horns that just keep playing that same lick over and over again.
Yeah. And Spector on this one was like so insistent, like, nope, you're gonna crescendo through every you're playing the same thing over and over, and you're gonna you start real soft and then crescendo. Yeah, that's what I want.
Yeah,
don't tell me what to do. That's how this week went.
Yeah. So that was a little behind the scenes of Sweet Little 16 sessions.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Woo. Yeah. I just find this one was too much going on.
Real busy.
Sloppy.
Yeah.
This is what they're talking about when they're like, these sessions weren't working, you know. As much as I praised the Phil Spector, when I'm like, this is when they weren't working together for sure.
Yeah.
So not that great.
No, and that's what ends side one. So
I was like, somehow too, they made a song that's kind of pretty exciting.
Yeah,
like dull, it's like really, not that exciting.
It feels very long. Like some of those extra texture songs, it sort of just keeps going.
Yeah, that You Can't Catch Me song we were talking about.
Yeah,
is 5 minutes long.
Yeah.
Almost, and you don't
mind feel like it.
This no. one, it feels like it's already worn out its welcome here where we stopped it.
Yeah,
you know, and it's only 3 minutes on.
Yeah,
it, so
well, okay. So that closes side one. So we flip the record and move on to the song that we started with in the beginning of the show, which is Slippin' and Slidin'.
Yeah. I don't like the horn arrangement on that one at all.
That's another Little Richard song.
The sax is okay on it, and it's mercifully short.
That's your analysis.
That's exactly how I feel about slipping and sliding.
Yeah.
Slipping and sliding. Do, 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 do. It's not my cup of tea.
Yeah. This one maybe is more interesting for the fact of where it is in John Lennon's history and his life, because it was the last song that John performed live at a tribute to Sir Lou Grade, who was, I think that's how you say it. He was a kind of a record guy, ATV Music, their music publisher. And it was his last performance. You can check it out on YouTube. John's wearing this really gaudy red suit, and he's got his hair pulled back in a ponytail. Looks very interesting, but this was the song they played, and he comes out and plays it, and it sounds exactly like what you heard on the album. So, but apart from that, I don't really find much to say. So it's forgettable.
Yeah, forgettable, not very good. Another forgettable, just nothing new at all. Just a real skipper is Peggy Sue. No call for it to be recorded again.
Isn't it funny to think that if John had recorded this a few years later after Paul had bought all of Buddy Holly's songs, then John would be paying Paul to use this on his album.
Yeah.
But yeah, Peggy Sue.
I would have at least given it an interesting story.
That's true.
It just kind of filling out this album.
Yeah, filling space here. Really nothing. You could put it back to back with Buddy Holly's version and not catch much different. There's a little bit of a tag at the end that's kind of cool, but apart from that, not much to it. So that leads us into our second medley. Tell us about the second medley.
Bring it on home and send me some love, and let's hear this. There's a particular instrumentation thing we're going to definitely talk about. Of course, that's Klaus Voormann going, yah, in the background.
Yah.
Playing bass guitar. Maybe you couldn't hear it over the whack, 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 whack.
So
that wah-wah sound on this track is garbage.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's very bland. The song, too much production. This is exactly the opposite of Stand By Me. Where his vocals are really, you know, giving you the heart of the lyrics of the song, you know, just like, you know, he's got you there.
Yeah.
This one, it's a very emotional song, but this version of it is just nothing. It just does nothing for me.
Yeah, it doesn't make me forget the Sam Cooke version, which is just out of this world. So. Marred by the production. It's that mid-70s sound with all the wah, the flange and the wah kinds of sounds. John, he does give it a little bit of gusto at the end when they slow it down and he says, "You better bring it to me." He kind of gives it something at the end, but it took a while to get there. Not the greatest song here. I like the other medley a lot better of Rip It Up and Ready Teddy.
Yeah, we could officially say this is the second best medley on the rock and roll album.
Definitely.
Now, we got to talk about the lyrics of this song, but let's play a little of it. Of course, one of people's favorite songs about a skinny person, Bodie Maroney. Thank you.
So,
well, a very deep song.
Yes. Do you know a girl named? Do you know a girl named Boney Maroney?
You know, it's mentioned twice that they're making love underneath an apple tree. Which A would, wouldn't that hurt?
That tree get bonked on the head a couple times.
Exactly. And B, you know, maybe feed that girl some apples if you're so concerned about her being so skinny, you know.
Good point.
And then the other thing with this lyric is this guy's a real jerk. He told her ma and pa to just what I'm gonna do. I'm like,
ooh,
what a, that's, they're very rude.
That is.
So, you know, it sort of has this sort of grind out feel to it, this thing, but just for some reason with no punch at all. It just doesn't really make it awesome and rocking. It just kind of sounds grunt. Sort of grungy, but not. I'm just distracted so much about
the lyrics.
There's another song, a song by the group Belle and Sebastian called String Bean Jean, which I find to be a very good song about a skinny person.
Mm-hmm.
And has a great lyric in it. Says the label on her jeans says 7 to 8 years old.
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah.
So that's pretty good. But so Boney Maroney is the second best skinny person song that I know. So very strange pick, though. What a weird choice.
This was another Phil Spector production. All you have to hear is the beginning of it. You can tell that right away. And then it's written by Larry Williams, who if you're a Beatle aficionado of the cover songs, you might remember. I think we talked about Larry Williams a little bit. The Beatles covered a couple of his songs, Slow Down and Dizzy Miss Lizzie. And so this is another one. So they were big Larry Williams fans. And you can check out the Larry Williams version of Boney Maroney on YouTube. And maybe you'll like it better than John's. But this, again, just kind of doesn't really do much. It just sort of goes nowhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
speaking of going nowhere,
here we go. This song, I'm not sure if it's the worst song in this album or not. We'll debate that. It's called Yaya. So Dave, please give us a deep analysis of the lyrics of this, please.
I'm guessing from the that Yaya might be a little bit of a euphemism for something. I don't know. I'm just thinking here that sitting on a Yaya, waiting for my Yaya. I don't know. I'm just thinking that there might be something deep to that meaning. But it had to be a big favorite here. John recorded it twice. If you remember, at the end of Walls and Bridges, it's a little tag at the end that he recorded with Julian Lennon on drums. And this is obviously a much more finished version. But I have to admit, I'm a little bit of a sucker for some of these novelty 50s songs. This is actually a song on the American Graffiti soundtrack, which that was around the same time, actually. It was, 1973? And so all this revival, 50s revival, was in the air. And the original version, I think it's Lee Dorsey, of Ya Ya is pretty funky. Now, the lyrics are nonsense, but who listens to 50 songs for the deep lyrics?
That's true. That's true.
It's more
maybe I'm being a little harsh on some of these songs.
They're just fun. You know, it's kind of a fun song. So I don't know. Do you have to pick apart about John's version, though, that maybe make it not as fun?
I just think it's a boring, straight blues kind of version of it. And the Lennon sort of really straining in his high register not quite going to falsetto, but almost. It's not my favorite Lennon to hear. It's short.
Yeah, it's short. I think. Not,
I don't think it's the worst song. I said it worst song of the album, but yeah. I was just being a jerk.
Yeah.
Now, this song, though, other than maybe Stand By Me, might be my favorite song on the album.
To finish it off.
And what this is exactly what I would have wished this whole album would be. A lot of fun, and it's called Just Because, and let's listen to it.
I remember this. Why, I must have been 13 in this game. Or was it 14? Or was it 22? I could have been 12, actually.
So there's Just Because.
Yeah, very. This is like the last Phil Spector of production on the album here, and it has that feel that that maybe the good things about the sessions that people are loose, there's no pressure. You're singing a song you like. You're not trying to make a great creation of your own here. Just having fun singing songs with your friends. And, you know, maybe people are passing the bottle of wine around, and John just nails the hell out of it singing-wise.
Yeah, it has tons of personality, this song.
Yeah.
Compared to some of those bland ones we just heard of Peggy Sue and those. This is just like, oh, everything you'd want from John Lennon. He's messing around with the lyrics. We'll hear a little more of this going out. We'll hear him mention his, this is Winston Obe. This is, you know, he's just sort of talking to the audience.
And you heard him.
Maybe I was 16 or maybe I was 20. I don't know. You know, it's just having a lot of fun. I really, really, really like the track.
Yeah, me too.
And it's one of the ones that definitely the one I sang most to myself. Throughout. That really is a thing to me that when I do these listens in preparation for these recording these episodes, what sticks out to me later, and why? We just talked about that George album. Some stuff stuck out to me because it was irritating me, and not because I was loving it. But this one, every time it came up, I was like, oh, yes,
yeah, great feel, yeah. This is a, you know, bar is closing. The last song of the band, late at night, it's 2 a.m. kind of a song. And it really ends the album on a high note, I'd say. So So that's rock and roll. Now there were some other songs, as we mentioned, there were other sessions that they did, and Phil Spector produced some other songs that came out on one of Chris's favorite John Lennon releases back in 1986. I remember getting this one on LP. Men Love Avenue, Angel Baby, and you know, some of these bonus tracks. Tell us a little, what do you think of those?
Well, when they reissued this album in 2004, they added them to this, to the end of the album, Angel Baby, To Know Her Is To Love Her, which is a Phil Spector song.
Yeah, yeah.
And Since My Baby Left Me, and then just a reprise of Just Because, a little more Just Because. Where he mentions Paul and George and Ringo in there. So, and I feel like in context of at the end of this album, they sound pretty decent. They sound pretty kind of loose and fun. Nothing to write home about. The To Know Her Is To Love Her is a very strange arrangement.
Yeah.
very, very odd and unusual, but I found it kind of fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
Mixed together with a bunch of other stuff on Men Love Avenue, it doesn't work at all. But putting them here and at the end, tagging them at the end of this album, it kind of, a couple of them, I was like, well, that's better. Isn't that better than Boney Maroney?
Yeah.
So, yeah. Anyway.
I think there's definitely some value to them. And also, if you have the John Lennon anthology, there are a lot of alternate versions of rock and roll songs. Actually, a lot of them without the Phil Spector production or the John Lennon production. It's just much more sparse, tighter rocking songs. So I highly encourage you to check those out, different alternate versions. But it's always debatable what could have been put on the album and why was it not put on. And maybe they just, John was so sick of Phil Spector and his antics by this point that he didn't want anything to do with them. And then he went up and recorded all those other songs with his group really efficiently and said, all right, this is it. We're done. So who knows? But yeah, it's pretty interesting overall. And if you had to give give rock and roll a rating here.
It's tough.
Yeah.
It's tough. It's just, just because Stand By Me, You Can't Catch Me, and a couple of other ones, like, really kind of save it for me.
Mm-hmm.
But is it an album that I would spin very much?
Yeah.
Certainly not. Probably the least of the, well, Men Love Avenue is the least of the. I'd say I barely consider that an album.
Right. Officially released album during his lifetime, yeah.
Yeah. But, it's on the lower end of the officially released albums that I'd spin of his. So, 5, I think.
Okay. That sounds about right. I'd probably give it a 6 on the fact of a few of those songs you mentioned. And I do, like, from a personal standpoint, I do like, as I mentioned earlier, some of those early rock songs because they're, fun to play in bands and always enjoyed that. So maybe just for that value of it. And I say this every time we talk about John albums or John solo stuff, but it just, listening over and over, makes me miss his voice so much.
It's just great here. And even this isn't his, like, as far as health of his vocal cords, the peak of it. But he just, like, belts them out, like that. Yeah. This last Just Because, he just really belting it out, and he sounds great. And I'll say this, as an album, listening to all of these together, once again, it's just kind of like so-so to me. But if any of them come up in rotation, in a shuffle situation where you're just shuffling a lot of songs and then all of a sudden Do You Want to Dance comes on, then I'm like, oh, yeah, great. I'm never like, I got to turn this thing off.
No.
Yeah. Even Peggy Sue.
Even Peggy Sue. It's short. you don't have to wait too long. It'll be over. So,
yeah.
Well, very good.
I wonder if the new reissue will sound different. I'm not sure I'm going to spend what is assuredly going to be hundreds and hundreds of dollars for the vinyl reissues. But, the ones that come from the analog tapes, I'm really interested in. So
yeah, certainly sound better.
See how those go.
Yeah, so that'll do it for our episode today. And before we go out, I know you wanted to make an announcement about some of the work you're doing.
Oh, yes. I'm right now. In fact, just yesterday, as of this recording, I was on set filming a TV pilot. So I'm filming a pilot with a group I've been in. The pilot is called Long Pause. And you can we're trying to raise a little bit of money to fund the filming of this. And the purpose why we're doing it is we're filming a pilot and we're trying to get it into a couple of festivals. And if we can get into these festivals, and if somebody sees it, they might be able to fund it further and make the whole series or actually get it on TV. Just a very quick, very short version of the story. It's about a guy who was in a band years ago who starts up a new band today with a friend, the sort of partner he was in the band with. Hmm. So it's got definitely got a, if you're a music lover, it's got a real big music element to it. What it would be like to not be in a band for 10 years and then start that band up again. Huh. You know, it would be very interesting. So, huh. And it includes some of my old music from my old band in the pilot. So how you can look at this is we'll put a post of this on Facebook. But if you go to Indiegogo and just look for Long Pause TV pilot, if you give $1 to it, I'll be thrilled. You know, but if you give as much as $25, then you get to come to the premiere and see it with us. And there's other perks. Please check it out. And if you if you want to give or don't want to give, that's fine. I really appreciate you checking it out.
Very cool. Very exciting. Look forward to seeing that when it's all done.
Yeah, it's been so much fun to film, and it's been a lot of fun to play again because Joel who's the actor who plays the drummer character used to be in a band 10 years ago as well. Oh. and he can play drums and I can play guitar, but neither of us have played in about that amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been like sort of weird to actually play and, you know, do it. So if you at least watch the video, You'll get to, if you've always been curious about what I look like when I'm talking, I'm in the video.
Very good.
If you at least watch the Indiegogo video. So, great.
Well, very good. Well, thanks. Look forward to that. So, and we look forward to bringing more exciting episodes coming up soon. So we'll be back with some Ringo coming up and another more Beatles stuff. And we had a good discussion on Facebook with one of our listeners about the Traveling Wilburys. So I think that's going to be in the pipeline too. We want to come back and take a look at those guys.
Yeah, great. So,
in the meantime, thanks again for listening. And what are we going out with today?
How about just a little bit more of Just Because? We can hear John talking to us.
All right. Sounds good. We'll catch you next time.
Goodbye.